Yo, what's good? What's happening, Rush Nation? Welcome to episode 73 of 5 Yard College. We're back. It's Wednesday. No, it's not unusual. This is us for the rest of the season, and who knows how far into the future. Man, week 11's done. Week 12 is just around the corner. Well, actually, there was some action last night. Week 12, Ash, has already started. There was some games last night. We don't tend to talk too much about the Mac, and I've thrown you onto a curveball straight out the gate there. You're facing an 0-1 pitch. My man, how are you doing?
Yeah, doing good. You're doing good. No, you're right. We don't tend to get the Mac games. So I was usually, well, previously recording on a Monday, but yeah, with the Wednesday recording, we do get a little bit of Mac action. So it's a nice change of pace. I think there was three games.
There's a game tonight.
Yeah, and then there was there's two games tonight. Buffalo, Northern Illinois, and Ball State are playing Central Michigan, I think. Okay. I believe they're the two games that are on tonight. Midnight, so technically tonight, technically tomorrow. Let's go with they're tomorrow, but you know, kick off at midnight our time. So, and then yeah, the Eastern and Western Michigan played, and a couple of other games yesterday. So, well, slash this morning.
The degenerate that I currently am on college football gambling.
I talked about
my lucky 15 missing by a point and a half, didn't we? Well, last week I had three wins and a team I backed at plus 14 and they lost by 14 and Skybet pushed it, didn't get a win. So wow. that's three lucky 15s I've missed out on by a point and a half over the whole three. So the slide is real, but I got involved with the Maction last night and I'm 2 of 3 waiting on Central Michigan to cover the plus 1.5 tonight.
It's going to be an interesting game for them. I think Ball State, I know Michigan are leading the MAC, their conference. No, they're not, sorry. Northern Illinois are top, but Ball State haven't had the best of seasons. I think they're 5-5, so I reckon you should be. I think you should be right with that one.
Go Chippewas. Man, I can't believe it. Like, what is it? Two games left in the regular season now, college regular season? Two or three?
Two. Yeah, two games for most. A couple have got one, but majority have still got two games left, and then that's it. We're on to the bowl games and the playoffs. It's come around so quick, it's ridiculous. I mean, this year has just gone so quick.
Oh, tell me about it. Considering we've all been off furloughed, in and out of work, out of the office, working from home, it's gone banzai quick. Ash, tell me, with it being Christmas Day on a Saturday, are there any games on Christmas Day this year? Because a couple of years ago, I know the Steelers played on Christmas Day. That must have been probably 6 years ago now, 7 years ago, something like that.
I don't think there is this year. No, there isn't. I'm looking at it now, Boxing Day. So 12:30 Boxing Day, Mississippi State and Mississippi are playing, and then there's a load of games on the Friday, but majority of them are on the Saturday. So no, we won't have any Christmas Day football in terms of college football anyway. I don't know if there's any NFL games on, but no college football this year, unfortunately.
Massively disappointing. Rush Nation, you are a regular viewer of the live stream, you'll notice that I'm drinking coffee this evening and not my usual water, although that is here armoured in the Arsenal. It's just been a brutal weekend so far. I planted 53 trees over the weekend, so...
I haven't even had a chance to get changed from work, so I'm still in my shirt.
Ash is looking fly without a hat on and his shirt. And we're all over the place on episode 73. We've got a little bit of injury news to get to. Ash, are we talking showdown this week, or have you just completely voided that from the show?
So I had originally voided it until I realised that we are now in the playoffs. So there is a little snippet at the end that I had. But I think next week and the week after, we'll dive deep into it, with it being the playoff semis and then the finals in week 13. So
Okay, Rush Nation, hold tight for the showdown talk at the end. You're lucky you've got any at all because, well, we'll find out later. Ash, let's do some injuries. Injury corner. Clemson's Justin Ross is expected to undergo foot surgery and miss the clash with Wake Forest, which is massive. Clemson and Ross will hold off surgery until Monday to establish if he can return this season or if it's over. But for somebody, Ash, with an injury history like Justin Ross's, who was making a huge claim for his NFL draft stock this season, this injury is just another blemish on his, you know, on his calling card.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, Clemson haven't had the best years offensively. Ross was their main receiving weapon. Obviously, he's gone for the year, which is obviously downside for them. But personally, I think he was just scraping under 500 yards receiving and a few touchdowns. He's not had the best year, but of course, he's not had the supply, and it's a massive, massive blow for him once again. He obviously held off leaving last year with a back injury, and there was talks about him not even being able to come back, and, yeah, and now he's having to have foot surgery. So, I mean, he is one of the biggest risks coming into the draft this year, and his draft stock's going to take a massive tumbling because of this.
He's the kind of guy that we could see go undrafted because of this injury.
Yeah, really could. Yeah, I mean, the talent's definitely there, but we've seen it multiple times in the past that hyper-talented and hyper-potential players going undrafted or going sixth, seventh round and never really establishing themselves because of injuries. And I hope not, because I think Ross has got the potential, but it's really up in the air at the moment. This is another... I mean, it's a foot injury. It's not devastating, but coming off of that back injury that almost ended his career, and now to be missing the last two games of the season and potentially not being fit, depending on what surgery it is. We don't know what surgery it is at the moment, but potentially missing a chunk of the off-season as well. It's devastating news for him personally.
Yeah, and it wasn't exactly like you say, with Clemson being down offensively. It's not been the showcase season he would have hoped with DJ Uiagalelei and really pushing for his draft stock to be improved after that back injury. He could be the sort of Sage Surratt of last year, where I can't remember whether he was drafted or not. He definitely was an undrafted free agent. I think he's currently in Detroit or at Seattle, one of the two. I'm getting him and who is the FSU kid who ended up leaving FSU?
Tamorian Terry's the one who went to Seattle undrafted and lasted about a week before his illegal troubles.
Yeah, so, okay, Sage Surratt is at Detroit, and you'd think with his production at TCU or Wake?
Wake Forest.
At Wake. He was brilliant at Wake. And you'd think that the way the Detroit Lions are playing at the moment, he'd be someone that they would bring off their practice squad or wherever he is right now and give him a shot, because he was electric. But Justin Ross is definitely following in the footsteps of those kind of receivers who just wasn't there for them, and their draft stock tumbled, and now they're languishing deep in rosters in the NFL.
Yeah.
Another shocking injury is Texas running back Bijan Robinson is going to miss the remainder of the season with a dislocated elbow, which he suffered in Saturday's game against Kansas. Obviously, Texas lost that one. Mm. It was Texas are the only team in the last 5 years to beat Texas or score more than 45 points in Texas.
I think you sent me...
I sent you the picture, Ash, but I've murdered the stat. It's something ridiculous.
You sent me the picture. So the last two teams to score 48-plus points against Texas in Texas or in Austin, in 2019 Kansas and 2021 Kansas. So, yeah, massive shock, the game itself. Obviously, Kansas winning it in overtime, and they had a dominant first half, and a lot of people expected them to drop off, and to an extent, I mean, they did. They obviously went into overtime level, but they never gave up, and they got the victory well deserved. And there's a lot of talk about Texas and Sarkisian, but this news is devastating. Fortunately for Robinson, obviously he's still young into his career, so he's at least got one more year left in college football, and he's had a great 2021 personally up to this point. This isn't going to do too many issues to him. Dislocated elbow is obviously not a great injury to have, but it's not the end of the world. And as I say, he shouldn't lose too much of personal stock on this, but it's a huge blow to Texas, one of their main weapons in a season that's been stuttering for them and going downhill gradually throughout the season, and it's almost a write off for them now. And yeah, as you say, Bijan going down when he did in the game didn't help at all.
Yeah, you could have got Kansas at the start of the game at 2,000-1 to win that one.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, Kansas, as I say, you can't take anything away from Kansas. They were phenomenal. But I mean, Texas, much like they aren't on the Showdog at all tonight. But Florida, both of those teams have checked out. In particular, we'll go on it quickly. But Florida's defense, they don't care. They're done. They generally just don't seem to have any interest. The game against Samford, an FCS program, they let in 52 points. I think that Dan Mullen personally isn't a very difficult situation as to what's going to happen with him. You can't let 52 points in a game when you're already under pressure. I think if he was going to go, he would have gone Monday. I think we may well see him to the end of the year, and the last two games will dictate what happens to him for 2022. But both of these teams, Texas and Florida, they just seem to have checked out. They're done for the year, both negative records. And well, Florida on a 5-5 and Texas on a 4-6, but their season's over, and I think they're just waiting for the off season now.
Yeah. The thing with Dan Mullen is I think there's quite a lot of money into next year for the buyout, so perhaps they're trying to work a way around that. We move on to Auburn, and their quarterback Bo Nix is going to undergo ankle surgery after sustaining the injury in Saturday's game against Mississippi State. Bo Nix will now miss the last two games of the season. Bo Nix was playing pretty well recently, Ash. This is quite a shock and a big loss for Auburn, obviously.
Yeah, massive loss for Auburn. He was having a good game as well. I think he was getting close to 400 yards, and he had two touchdowns before he went down. And yeah, big blow for them. From a team point of view, big blow for Bo Nix. From a personal point of view, again, another guy coming into the draft, and up until this season was a bit of a laughing stock because of just of how he was so up and down. And he's had a great year, and now he's obviously injured. And again, Auburn lost to Mississippi State and are now unranked, and their season seems like it's pretty much done as well. I can't imagine they're going to be able to get much done in the SEC with the games remaining. And yeah, it's just another three key injuries to players that have had a lot of tension on them this year they could have avoided having, especially Bo Nix and Justin Ross, with it being their final years.
Absolutely. And then finally, we talk about a Wisconsin running back again. Chez Malusi is going to miss the rest of the season with an injured left knee after he went down in Saturday's victory over Rutgers. Malusi has also been ruled out of the 2022 spring practices, which is big news for Wisconsin. Obviously, quite a severe knee injury for Chez Malusi. It seems every week, Ash, we're talking about Utah or Wisconsin running backs.
I know, it really does. It's crazy. Just consistently, their running backs are in discussions, and yet they still seem to keep finding them. Like, it just seems like it's never a problem. I think this week, Braylon Allen, who has been him and Malusi up to a point, have been a great tandem together. Braylon Allen then chucked up 173 yards and three touchdowns. So, I mean, from a Wisconsin offense point of view, they aren't going to miss a beat. But yeah, big blow for Malusi missing out for the rest of the year, because he was having a good 2021 up until this point. And as you mentioned, he's already ruled out a spring practice, so it's a bad knee injury that he's got, and we're not going to see him until the preseason at this rate.
Yeah, some big injuries there, like you said. Those four players are key for their programs. The good thing about Wisconsin is they seem to have just running back after running back after running back step up into production, so they'll be fine, as you mentioned. Let's move on to Coach's Corner. We've got some news that dropped yesterday, I think, and Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente have agreed to part company after six seasons. Fuente finished his head coaching career at Virginia Tech with a 43-31 overall record. Virginia Tech are currently 5-5 on the year. Winning 48-17 against Duke was obviously not enough of a win, and Virginia Tech decided to move on from Justin Fuente. I thought the Hokies would at least wait until Christmas, because I think after Christmas, the buyout becomes less. But it appears that some sort of mutual agreement has happened, and it's going to be a new era at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're the... It is Virginia Tech that you follow, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Sorry, I forgot if it was Virginia or Virginia Tech. But obviously, yeah, for a change, you're probably a bit dialed in more than me on them. But I was quite surprised to see this happened. I think Fuente's done a, a reasonable job there for a program like Virginia Tech. I think they haven't had the best of years, let's be honest. I think they're middle of the division, of the coastal division in the ACC on a, as you say, 5-5 record. But I'm surprised to see him go. I can imagine there might have been some maybe disagreements on other things rather than just the performances from the way this has happened. And yeah, it's a bit of a surprise, but 6 years is a long time in a coaching role, and yeah, maybe time for a new change.
I read a really interesting article about self-progression and moving forward in career and stuff. And they said after 7 years, you stop making friends and you only start to make enemies. So a good point to move on is at 7 years. So maybe Justin Fuentes peaked a little bit early and he started making enemies. But I think ultimately they brought him in as an offensive-minded head coach. He then decided in the off-season that Braxton Burmeister was going to be the guy to go with. Whether Hendon Hooker is dreadful in practice or Fuente couldn't got the best out of him. But you now look over at Tennessee, Hendon Hooker is firing his way up the draft board. And I think he's going to be, he may even end up being a day two pick now, like an early day two pick. And if you go and look at Hendon Hooker's tape, he's got absolutely everything you want from an NFL quarterback. He is still a little raw, but he's got the legs, he's got the arm, he's got good decision-making. I think we could see him go higher than perhaps we think in the draft. And I think the decision to move him on to Tennessee when Fuente was definitely a Braxton Burmeister guy, that may well have been one of the final nails in the coffin.
Yeah, I think you could be right there.
I think when you see what Hendon Hooker is doing at Tennessee and the fact that Fuente is supposed to be this offensive-minded guy, Virginia Tech, yeah, they haven't had big weapons. And Mitchell got in turn, Trey Mitchell, the tight end, I think Virginia Tech's tight ends, Trey Mitchell. He's really good, but he got injured, and that's a huge loss for their offense. So with Hendon Hooker not being there, Burmeister not perhaps being the guy that Fuente thought. I was pretty convinced this was going to get done, but I thought it was going to be in the new year after the buyout, but maybe they've moved some money around or something, I'm not sure.
Yeah, potentially.
Lincoln Riley has come out to reporters to say he has no interest in the LSU job following reports linking him to the job. It seems strange to me that he's got no interest when LSU is such a huge job. Surely there's interest, but depending on how high. But anyway, Riley signed a 6-year contract with the Sooners back in 2020 and has followed Jimbo Fisher of Texas A&M, who has also distanced himself from the job. Ash, do you think this is smoke and mirrors, or do you actually think Lincoln Riley wants to stay in Oklahoma?
I don't know if Lincoln Riley wants to stay in Oklahoma, but I think the fact that he's linked for much bigger jobs, in particular NFL. I'd be very shocked if we don't see Lincoln Riley in an NFL job in the 2022 season. He was rumoured to be of interest to a number of teams last year in the offseason, and he decided to stay an additional year in Oklahoma. It doesn't surprise me at all that he's rejected this. And as I say, I think that he's got his sights set on the NFL. Maybe this offseason, maybe for the Denver Broncos, but potentially 2023. I don't know. It depends how the rest of their year goes. I mean, it's difficult because it's highly likely he's not going to be in the playoffs. We'll get onto that later. And there's a chance that they're not even going to be in the Big 12 title game if things don't go their way. So he might decide to decide that his days are done in Oklahoma and move on. And there's definitely going to be some NFL teams that are going to be looking for a head coach. And Lincoln Riley is one of the top young coaches in the game at the moment. So, yeah, no shock at all to see him say no.
No, we're talking Cliff Kingsbury, Kyle Shanahan kind of interest for the NFL. And
definitely.
It would be a superb move for the Broncos to flip from the defensive Vic Fangio to bring in Lincoln Riley. Look at all the weapons he's got there. Yeah. You just need to bring Lincoln Riley in with, just tap him up now. I mean, it's probably against all sorts of regulations, but just say, look, Mr. Riley, what quarterback do you want? We'll get him in from the draft and come over and and have a go with the Denver. Anyway, Butch Davis is not going to return to Florida International following this season. The program rejected Davis' request for a one-year extension. So when they reject your extension request, you know you're on your way. And they've started the search for a long-term successor. Florida International have sucked pretty hard this year, Ash.
They have indeed, yet. 1-9 record. Just a poor year all round. Butch Davis is 70. He's been there for... He's been there for a number of years. I can't remember exactly how long he's been there for, but they've decided that they need a new long-term head coach to right the ship and get them back in Conference USA standing. And if I'm not mistaken, they're one of the teams that are leaving the Conference USA. So fresh coach, year established in the Conference USA, moving to a new conference in 2023. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I want to just check that they are one of the teams that are leaving now. I'm fairly sure.
Insert lift music whilst we wait for Ash to fact check his statement, Ash Nation. I mean, we can move on whilst you do fact check. This one is for you, Jord. Washington has fired head coach Jimmy Lake in his second season in charge and ends an up-and-down year for the Huskies and Lake personally. He was suspended this year due to the on-field incidents on the sideline and his recruitment has come under fire. But after that suspension, they've just decided to walk away from Jimmy Lake. The suspension sort of took me by surprise, Ash. I thought it would just be a pure cut straight away from his actions. The suspension was perhaps... It took me by surprise. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think the suspension, first off, obviously, it was a suspension, an on-field, so he wasn't allowed to attend the game. But there was that. There was other issues of him hitting a player and just all sorts of stuff going on and off the field. They weren't happy with his recruitment over the last couple of years, like from his first year and into this year. And this was just... waiting to happen. It's a shame that Jordan isn't on today. Obviously, as a Huskies fan, he could have probably alluded to the behind the scenes a lot more than we could. But from the face of it, Lake was a time bomb waiting to happen for him to go, and he has now officially gone. So yeah, no real surprise there, to be honest with you.
Well, Jord, if you are watching on the live stream and you want to get involved, hit us up in the comments. I will ping you an invite to get into the chat and you can bring us some Washington Huskies up to the date news. I don't know if you are or not, but we've mentioned your name twice now. So that's pretty much it for the Pac-12 and Jord, apart from the CP rankings that are coming up.
Yeah, Florida International are joining the AAC as well. So I did think they were leaving.
Well, you were correct. You shouldn't have doubted yourself, man.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, and then finally, the UConn Huskies have acted quickly to bring in their new head coach. Former NFL coach Jim Mora has been announced as the head coach. I should have put my Huskies hoodie on for today, Ash. He's going to act as assistant coach until November the 28th to get a better understanding of his new job, and then will take charge as the official head coach in the Huskies' final game of the season. Do you think he's attending as an assistant? Because it gives him an out if he decides he really doesn't want it after what he sees, because UConn have been... dire this season.
Well, I think yes, potentially, but also this is his first college head coaching job, so they want him to get used to the recruitment side of things, the day-to-day running. He was at UCLA, but that was about a decade ago that he was there, and I think he left about 6 or 7 years ago. I think it's more for him to get used to the runnings of the program before he officially steps as the head coach. But I mean, to be honest, it's not a bad idea. I'm surprised that more programs don't do this. But yeah, maybe it's also an easy out for him as well if he watches the next game and goes, "Nah, you're all right." But I think if anyone steps in, you're going to go, "Nah, you're all right." You're gonna have to be a brave man to take this job on with the way that the Huskies have been for the last few years.
Well, they're a basketball school, aren't they?
That's very true. They're a very good basketball school as well.
And football is second sport for them. So yeah, we can move on from the UConn Huskies and I'll dust off the hoodie for next week after they're victorious. And they're not going to win. Right, let's do some college football playoff rankings, Ash. Nicely changed on the dock there after you threw me to the wolves with the CP rankings a little minute ago.
Thank you.
25-1... 5 each, first or second?
You can go first this week. I went first last week.
Oh, what a treat. So at 25, we've got Mississippi State. Then 24 is Houston, 9-1. That's a big record for a 24th position team. Utah at 23. UTSA undefeated at 22, a 10-0 record. Moved up a spot, though, from last week's 23. And then finally, Arkansas at 21. They're 7-3. They've moved up from 25 last week to 21. Ash, of these five, anything catch your eye?
I think Mississippi State, after defeating,
Auburn.
My mind went completely blank there. Yeah, beating Auburn, who of course were ranked last week. It's justified that they jump into the rankings in place of Auburn, essentially. Houston are the top team in the AAC at the moment, despite Cincinnati still being undefeated. Houston have a better in-conference record, so. And that they dropped out after their loss a couple of weeks ago, and in the AP rankings, and they've obviously been justified with their record and being top of the AAC. There's no real surprises here, to be honest with you. I think it's as expected. UTSA still one of three undefeated teams in the countries now, and still only in the 20s. Could maybe feel a little bit hard done by.
Yeah, just strength of schedule has really shot them in the foot.
Yeah, always. It always will with these sort of programs, unfortunately.
Yeah.
At 20, NC State come in. They hold their college playoff rankings despite the loss to Wake Forest. San Diego State, after their victory over Nevada, are at 19. Pitt are 18, up from 21 last week. Iowa are up three bases from 22-17 with an 8-2 record, and Texas A&M keep their ranking, but they drop from 11-16 after the loss to Ole Miss this weekend.
Yeah, it's all pretty. It's getting to that point now where everything's starting to iron itself out, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think Texas A&M and NC State have had good years up to a certain point, and the losses that they've taken have probably. They've been tight, fought games, and maybe you can understand the losses that they've taken. So I understand them both still being ranked, and I think the drops are fair for these two programs. Texas dropping from 11-16, and of course NC State from 16-20. But again, they both lost to ranked teams, and it's justified. Again, I can't. There's no real complaints here, and there's no real surprises. And like you say, this is where the changes will likely come now in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. So at 15, we've got the 7-3 Wisconsin Badgers. After being 18th last week, they're up three spots. BYU stay at 14 after just an average performance. Then you've got Oklahoma, who are down from 8-13. After their capitulation and blowout loss to, it wasn't a blowout, but Baylor did everything right in that game. They're at 13. Ole Miss are at 12. They're up three spots from 15. And then Baylor are up two spots. That's a big swing, isn't it? Baylor up two, Oklahoma down five, considering Baylor beat Oklahoma. Rightly so. Baylor are ahead of Oklahoma now after that win. Baylor are at 11.
Yeah, and I mean, we said it last week, didn't we? We'd hope that Baylor see over Oklahoma, and we thought it would happen, and that's exactly what happened. We'll get onto it in a bit more detail shortly. It's one of obviously our games from last week that we highlighted, so we will discuss it. But yeah, I think the drop for Oklahoma is justified. We said them being 9-0 last week meant nothing. I think 8 was still too high for them with the way they've played this year, and obviously, Baylor have seen off a few teams now, and then putting one over on Oklahoma has justified the climb. You said BYU's average performance this week. So, do you mean their average performance sitting in the sofa? Because they have a bye.
It's, you can't have a good or a bad bye week. It's average.
You can't. I mean, yeah. I have some good bye weeks. Just go out on the piss, and I have some bad bye weeks sitting at home.
Okay,
but no.
I think half the team went out and half the team didn't, which makes it an average week.
I will accept that. I will accept that. But yeah, again, like you say, I think Wisconsin had a dominant display against Northwestern. I think they only let one touchdown. And as I mentioned earlier, 173 yards from Allen and three touchdowns. They decimated Northwestern. So again, a climb was justified with the teams performing around them. But we are now into the top 10. And at number 10, Wake Forest back into 10th spot. They were only outside of the top 10 for a single week before they obviously overcame NC State. At 9, Oklahoma State have climbed up from 10 and are arguably, and well, not arguably, they are the best team in Big 12 at the moment. And there's a tasty end of regular season matchup against Oklahoma to come in 2 weeks' time. So, but Oklahoma State don't win against Oklahoma. So if they can see off Oklahoma, that's going to be a massive, massive victory for them and essentially lock them into the title game. Notre Dame have climbed up from 9 to 8 this week. Michigan State and Michigan both stay at 7 and 6 respectively after after both of them won this week. And I still can't understand how Michigan State are below Michigan. But what I will say, is Michigan this week, the victory over Penn State was a great victory. And to be honest, it's probably one of the best performances I've seen from Michigan in a long time. And this was a justified victory. They ground it out against a solid Penn State defense, yeah. and rightly deserved this victory. Missing one of their best weapons as well, Blake Corum, the running back, was out injured, and still being able to get this victory despite a late attempt of a comeback from Penn State. They saw out this game, and McNamara and co. And Haseem Haskins, I think, is the tandem running back with Corum until he got hurt. Haseem Haskins, he had a solid game. Didn't score a touchdown, but I think he got just over 150 rushing yards. So
yeah. I think it's Haseem Haskins, I think.
Apologies.
I think he had a career high 31 carries as well on those.
Yeah.
So
I was, to be honest, I was a bit surprised and disappointed that to see him have so many carries with Corum being out, because they've got a great freshman running back in Donovan Edwards sat there ready and waiting. And I'm looking forward to this lad getting on the field, because from high school he looks phenomenal and he's not really had a great deal of opportunities this year. So hopefully next year he does get those chances.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair when you think how well their running back tandem has been doing.
Yeah, definitely.
And just continue to ride Haskins. I mean, if Corum's out again and they ride Haskins for the next week, I don't mind it at all, because I'm playing him in the semi-final against Jack. Interestingly, we're going to talk, I think, hopefully a little bit later on. There's nothing in the notes, Ash. Did you lie to me? You lied to me about the showdown chat. You've got me. He's now writing it in, right? If you can see the show, Doug, he's writing it in. But yeah, I mean, Michigan were good. Notre Dame, they, in a game against Virginia, which we thought would be a lot closer, they just absolutely stunted Virginia. I mean, you know, Brennan Armstrong is injured. I don't know whether he left that game or not, but everything runs through him in Virginia. So that one was obviously set back there. And then you mentioned Wake beating North Carolina, NC State. I absolutely love the fact that they won that. And now with Justin Ross, we're going to talk about Wake in a little bit, Ash, but with Justin Ross out, they've got three of their four games are tricky, and they're 1-1 with two to go. And NC State was the game I thought they'd slip up on. So
yeah,
it's going to be a real interesting final two games there. Right, at 5, we still have the Bearcats just outside the playoffs, agonizingly close. This week is going to be telling for them. Then the Buckeyes, they didn't fall victim to Purdue at the weekend. They put on a devastating performance. Stay at 4, 9-1. Oregon, stay at 3, 9-1. Alabama, stay at 2, 9-1. And Georgia, to round us off, is the third, only one of three, as Ash said, undefeated teams, 10-0. Again, looked fairly convincing against Tennessee. Of that lot, Ash, is pretty much as is right now with the Oregon win over Ohio State, right?
No. no. I mean, there's no surprise this top five haven't changed. I don't think anyone was expecting that after this week's viewings. What I did find quite funny is, I think the Georgia game against Tennessee. I think Tennessee were up 10-7 at the end of the first quarter, and people were like, that lasted the first quarter, and then they shut them out till the end. And they just they've pummeled them. So yeah, I mean I reckon they did it on purpose. But yeah, obviously, as you say, Ohio State didn't fall victim to Purdue as people were expecting, and they did the opposite of that. I think this was one of their best offensive displays we've seen from Ohio State this year. And Oregon, to be honest with you, obviously it was on late at night, so I caught the highlights and then I sort of looked at it the next day. But I mean, up until halftime, Washington State were giving them a game. They were tied at halftime 14-14. And then I think Oregon took control in the third quarter and the fourth quarter. Washington State tried to fight back, but they just didn't have anything left. But I was worried for Oregon at a point. And I think if that had happened, if they'd have lost, I mean, of course, Cincinnati would have stepped into fourth. And I think we would have probably seen Oregon do an Oklahoma and drop down sort of like 9 or 10 with the teams around them. So yeah, I wouldn't say they got lucky, because they still did look good, especially in the second half in that game. But we've got an interesting matchup next against Oklahoma, against Utah, and then finishing it off with the rivalry game against Oregon State. Interesting time still for Oregon and definitely still for Ohio as well. Ohio have still got the two Michigan teams to play. And yeah, I mean, I hope we don't see a shake-up. I believe this is how it's going to finish. I would prefer to see Cincinnati in the playoffs over Oregon, but I have a suspicion this is where we're going to finish up come the playoffs time.
No, Matt, listen, if there's a game Oregon are gonna, I think they'll win the Civil War just because of how important that is in the rivalry as well. Yeah. Although, Utah are playing some really good football right now.
They are.
And I think of the two games, that's their real test. And if Oregon lose to Utah, there's a fair chance they lose in the Civil War as well.
Mm.
And like you say, if Oregon have one slip up, then
it's done. If Alabama, Oregon, or Ohio State slip up once, there's three or four teams behind them that will likely jump them. Obviously, Georgia, one slip up is going to be fine for them. But I don't. No one sees that. Let's be honest with you. But yeah, it's one slip up away from any of these teams to be out of the playoffs, and any one of the other teams to be in the playoffs. There's still, you could go down still maybe to Wake Forest. I know that their schedule in the AAC has not been as competitive as the other ones this year, but you could argue anywhere down to 10 could, in theory, still get there with slip ups. It's unlikely. It looks like it's probably going to be out of these five, four of the five here are going to be the playoff teams. But you never know. With the way this season is going, you really never know.
No, and Ash, we never talked about Kenneth Walker's Heisman campaigning with Michigan State. Another superb week. 30 rushing attempts, 143 yards, two touchdowns. Once again, the catalyst for the Spartans.
Yeah, he really is. And it's unfortunate that Bryce Young is still the heavy favourite, and I think it's going to be extremely unlikely for anyone other than Young to take it now. I mean, I say this every time, and then I think of CJ Stroud and the fact that he's still got Michigan and Michigan State and the way he played on the weekend. But even after the way that he played against Purdue this weekend, Young's odds went lower. So it seems lock on that Young's going to get it, barring a miracle, and let's hope that happens. Because I would love Kenneth Walker to get it. I think he's had one of the best seasons in college football of anybody. So,
Question, Ash: is the Heisman handed out before or after the SEC title game?
No, I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's after, but I can't remember off the top of my head. Stuff at me.
If Georgia beat Bama in the SEC title game, and does that knock off his Heisman chances?
I know, it depends. It depends how badly they knock them off. 11th of December is when the Heisman is awarded.
Say that's great, but when is that?
SEC
before or after?
Final. Just give me a minute. SEC title. I'm back in the office. SEC title game is on. Don't know. Why won't it tell me? I'm literally looking at the SEC title game. And
I wonder if the date isn't set yet.
It's the week before.
Ooh.
So, yes, it could have an impact.
Okay.
Ashing, but very... I don't think it will.
Of teams ranked new this week, we've got Houston and Mississippi State.
Yep.
Purdue and Auburn are both out, as mentioned. In the next line of the show, Rush Nation, Ash has put Showdown Chat in very small text. Ash, do you want to talk about it, or should we just do it next week?
I think I think we cover it quickly because, as you say, we are in the playoffs. This is the playoff week, the first playoff week. So obviously, with it being college football, it works slightly differently to the NFL, whereas you go straight into the semifinals because, I mean, we can you can do it where you have a bye week for the top two and a quarterfinal, blah blah blah. But for the showdown, we do semifinals, finals, and it just because obviously, like the NFL, the final week can sometimes be a bit ugh. So it's just it's easier to do it this way. I realized after you said, but I realized last week that I had no chance of getting in anyway because I forgot that it was the playoffs this week. I thought there was still two more weeks and I could have got in on even, but it didn't matter in the end because the results didn't go my way for this week, but it did for other people. So the playoffs are as this. We've got, of course, Jord actually finished top of the regular season rankings with a 9-2 record, taking over Jack in the final week on points. Jordan won the regular season title, as we'll call it, by 17 points, I believe.
My light's about to die.
Yeah, over Jack. Jack come in at second with a 9-2 record. Stocks finished third with a 7-4 record, and then Rich rounded out the top four with a 7-4 record. So, and Tom, unfortunately, much like Jord, won the regular season on points. Tom missed out on the playoffs by points by some distance. Nearly,
you're right, some distance.
Don't two stocks. Hang on to you, but under 100 points. I think it was about 70 points to Rich. So. Yeah, Tom is unfortunately missing out this year. I finished eighth. I had a terrible end to my season after starting 3-0 or something like that. It just went wrong for me from there. But the playoffs are set, and we've got Rich and George facing in one, and Jake and Stocks in the other. So
yeah, I played Jack last week. I needed to beat Jack to stay in the playoffs ahead of Tom because my points fall record was better. And I managed to squeak a win against Jack, and then I've got him again because he's obviously second, and I'm third. So
yeah, so you won by 8 points to go over Jack, despite having Caelan Williams in your lineup. But of course, he unfortunately had a injured player in his lineup as well. Tavin Thomas from Utah was ruled out, and if he'd have put any of his other offensive weapons on the field from his bench, he would have lost. He left Garrett Wilson on the bench.
Yeah, that's a shocker.
Who put up 41 points. Maybe that was an oversight, or maybe he thought, like we may have thought about Purdue. I don't know, but
maybe
it doesn't matter in the end.
He's back in this week, I tell you that.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, 100% back in this week. Yeah, he's already back on his lineup this week. I'm looking at it now. Yeah, that's going to be a fantastic matchup. Wasn't it you? It was you two in the final last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, so
one of you are going to be in the final once again this year.
Yeah, and Rich is on a really hot streak at the moment. Yeah. So if Rich knocks Jord off and I manage to beat Jack again, the college boys once again have failed to get to the... Although then I will be flying that flag, boys. So.
Yeah, of course you will. You were neutral to start the year, but you are college through and through now.
Yeah, tentacles have well and truly grabbed hold of the Stocks machine. So that's your showdown rundown. Next week, we'll be back with some semi-final results. Actually, have you got a game, or is that you done now?
No, that's over? It. No, we haven't got a consolation bracket. We might bring it in next year because we're going to continue the showdown. Maybe get a few other people in. We rotated a bit this year, but no, we don't have a consolation. So that is me done in the showdown. Unfortunately, I've just got my campus to count and lease to look forward to now.
Right, let's do some Week 11 reviews. We're going to start with Oklahoma Baylor. Baylor did win 27-14. Caelan Williams was benched. Spencer Rattler was brought back in. Williams had a 14-1 touchdown to interception record before this game, but that was smashed after his two interceptions. Ash, anything else from this game that I have missed?
From the game in particular, yeah, there's a few bits, but from a record standpoint and a stat standpoint, this was the first loss for Oklahoma in 17 games. They were on a 17-game win streak, which was the most in the country up until this game. So the Bears managed to snap that. Baylor defense was phenomenal in this game, and they held the Sooners to 260 total yards, which is the fewest that Lincoln Riley he's ever scored in his time at Oklahoma. I think he's been head coach for 5 years, and he was offensive coordinator for two or three, I believe. And this is the lowest amount of total yards that they've given to him. So I say given to him, but so yeah, I mean, Baylor defense were phenomenal. Jerry Bohannon, the Baylor quarterback, was solid. He did enough but it was all in the run game. Like Bohannon throwing, like his passing, they didn't need to. He only threw for, so I think he made 12 completions for just over 100 yards and a touchdown and interception. But he ran for over 100 yards, two touchdowns. Abraham Smith, the running back, also went for nearly 150 yards. Mm-hmm. So they grounded Oklahoma defense with their run game. And then, as I say, the Baylor offense shut Caleb Williams down. Caleb Williams, as you say, got benched. He only threw for 84 yards and two interceptions before this game. Since he took over from Spencer Rattler, he threw for 14 touchdowns and gave up one interception in the games before this. Oklahoma had no answers on offense for this Baylor defense. It was a poor game from Williams. He made some silly mistakes, as you can imagine, for a young quarterback in his first season. But credit's got to go to Baylor offense and Baylor defense and the defensive coordinator. They stifled Oklahoma for the whole game. They shut them down and they put it in the hands of the Baylor runners. And this was, it was a close fought game up until the fourth quarter, and Baylor ran away with it from that point. They dominated the fourth quarter and made it look the 24-7 that we see. And we were waiting for Oklahoma to come up against the stiff opposition that would cause them problems, and the first time that happened they succumbed to it.
They're done, yeah. They weren't as good as their record, but their record and their strength of schedule was one of the easiest in the country, and it showed when they came up against a good team in Baylor. Yeah. Texas A&M lost 19. Well, Ole Miss beat Texas A&M 29-19. That's a much better way of putting that, Stocks. I didn't see any of this one, Ash. Fill me in.
Yeah, again, another defensive display. So, I mean, Texas A&M are all year have been one of the best defenses in the country alongside Georgia. And Ole Miss made it look the opposite. I know it was only 29-19 victory, but they didn't really have any issues getting past Texas A&M. And on the flip side of it, Ole Miss's defense shut down Texas A&M for much of this game. Up the first half, they shut them out completely. In the second half, they never really got going. Zach Calzada, we've spoken about him a few times since Haynes King went down, that we weren't really too sure about him. He's very sporadic and he's not the answer for A&M. And unfortunately, on the day that shown, he made some rookie errors in the quarterback and threw for a couple of interceptions. And yeah, this was all about Ole Miss's defense, and their offense were doing enough against, as I say, up until this point, a stout defense, one that has shut down. Yes, Matt Corral is one of the best quarterbacks in college at the moment, but the offense as a whole has not been one that you look at and go, yeah, blimey, that's a great offense. But they looked like that. They made it light work against this Texas A&M defense that has been one of the best defenses this year. So yeah, it was surprising. I was expecting it to be a good game, and that's why we had it on our games to watch last week. But I wasn't expecting this sort of performance from the Rebels. And I think it was rounded off in the fourth quarter when they, I think they were up 15-13 at the time, and their quarterback Ashanti Kistrunk, I believe is how you pronounce his surname, intercepted the ball, and then Ole Miss came straight up and scored with their running back to basically put the game to bed by that point. It never really looked like A&M were gonna get back to it. But yeah, solid performance all round from Ole Miss, and a surprising performance on the defensive side from A&M.
Yeah, another surprise was Nevada losing to San Diego State 23-21. Carson Strong balled out. Romeo Dude had another massive game.
Yeah.
Excuse me, but Cole Turner wasn't playing, which is big news for Nevada. And
yeah, they missed Cole Turner. I wouldn't say the result itself is not surprising. I would have liked Nevada to win, and I did have Nevada to win because of my love affair for Carson Strong. But I think when you look at it, the way San Diego State have been all year, they are one of, if not the best team in the Mountain West. And this game showed that. They beat Nevada in a close fought game. They were back and forth consistently throughout this game. But as you say, Carson Strong balled out 350 yards, three touchdowns. Don't ask this lad to run. He's not the best runner. He can do it when he's desperate. But yeah, put the ball in his hands. And when you've got a wide receiver alongside you like Romeo Dubes, you're laughing. Dubes, 127 yards and two touchdowns. He's probably cemented himself as the... He is definitely a top three wide receiver in this draft class, I think, is in my opinion. I don't think he's... I suspect that Ohio boys are going to go ahead of him. And then it's then a conversation between him and... Wow, my Treylon Burks from Arkansas. I think those two are the conversation for the third for me personally.
How can you even not consider Drake London at that point?
I think Drake London is just behind Dubes and Burks, in my opinion. But I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody want him over the likes of Dubes. But yeah, I think Nevada have had a great year. They've dropped some games that they really shouldn't have dropped, which has put them in a bit of an awkward position for the Mountain West now. I think it almost eliminates them from the title game contention, and it essentially locks in San Diego. Now they are a game in hand, and they've got Vegas next week, University of Vegas next week, which is a gimme. There should be no reason why they don't win their game. And then they face Boise State to end the year, which Boise State have been very up and down this year, and I would be very surprised to see San Diego not win that game. So, but it was, I would recommend people go and watch it if they have time. As I say, Carson Strong was balling out. Greg Bell, the running back for San Diego State, had a phenomenal game. And the San Diego State offense as a whole was solid.
It's the reason San Diego State are winning is because of their punter, Matt Araiza. He had five punts. He averaged 55 yards this week, but I think he's had an 85-yard punt this season. His average is around 70 yards for the season, and I've seen some people say he could be the best punter to ever play a game.
Yeah, it's crazy because he's also their kicker.
Yeah,
which is fantastic. I think he scored a 48-yarder to. He scored a 48-yarder in the second quarter to take the lead, and then a 39-yarder in the fourth quarter to take the lead. But yeah, as you say, it's just I would say he's the best punter in the country at the moment.
When you can get crazy on the field and your punter can kick you up the other end anyway.
It's mad, isn't it? Yeah, it's crazy. And let's not be surprised to see him potentially go like fifth round, something like that. We know that when people see a punter they really like, you can get some shocks. So wouldn't be surprised to see him go fifth round when he goes to the NFL.
I wouldn't be offended if Denver took him around then. Up in Mile High Air, that boy would just kick it out the end zone every single time.
Definitely, definitely.
Take that. Right, Ash, let's do some Week 12 look ahead and then hit the hay. Yeah. We've got some big games this week. We're starting with Wake Forest at Clemson. We've waxed lyrical about Wake this year and how we thought perhaps they could beat Clemson. And with Justin Ross out, that's a definite possibility now.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I think their offense, as we said earlier, was suspect already this year, and now losing their best receiving option, it's not looking good for Clemson. But on the flip side of this, a victory for Clemson puts them a game behind Wake Forest with the win advantage. Wake Forest dropped the game against Boston College and Clemson win their final game. Clemson flip the switch and they're in the title game. So there is a lot riding on this game for both teams. Now, yes, that would mean Boston College beating Wake Forest, but strange things have happened. This is the judgment day game for both of these two teams in the ACC Atlantic, and who will be coming up against Pitt, who I think are locked in for the coastal representation. I think Pitt are on 8-2, and then I believe Virginia are behind them 6-4. So again, two game flip, but that's highly unlikely. I think Pitt are a lock in one side, and this game will potentially decide it. And I think whoever wins this is going to be in the title game, barring I mean, Clemson need assistance for the game after, but obviously if Wake Forest win, they're in. That's the end of. But that's why this game is so important. And it's crazy to think that we're seeing Clemson at what, 7-3 and stuttering on offense after the year they had last year, and going, yeah, Wake Forest are the favorites in this game and are likely going to be the ACC title champions come the end of the year.
Yeah, but Wake aren't favorites, Ash.
They're Clemson, still not favorites.
No, Clemson are 4.5-point favorites. Yeah, Wake are dogs.
Nah, crazy. Crazy.
That's mental, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised. I know it's Clemson, and I know that their defense is still solid, but yeah, I'm surprised at that.
That shocked me. That has absolutely shocked me. Right, moving on. Michigan State at your beloved Buckeyes.
Yeah, good. Crazy game. This is massive. I mentioned that the Ohio have got Michigan State and Michigan to end the year. What I didn't mention is that all three teams are on a 9-1 record. Ohio hold the luxury of leading the East with a 7-0 record in the conference, whereas Michigan State and Michigan are both at 6-1. But a victory for Michigan State once again flips this on its head. And the way Michigan have been playing, and Ohio at times look suspect, and then Ohio go and do what they did against Purdue, and you go, yeah, Michigan State and Michigan don't stand a chance if this offense is the one that's on the field. I don't care who's in front of them, bar the Georgia defense. And even then, Ohio, the way Ohio State offense have been playing, like especially against Purdue, that would be a game. But even so, you can't take anything away from this game. If Michigan State wins, that this ties them at the top. Not including Michigan. If they then win, you've got three teams all level on the same record. Mental. It's so crazy. And then you look at the other side for the Big Ten West at the teams. Wisconsin lead that, tied in conference record with Iowa, but top at the luxury of beating them. And then you've got Minnesota, Purdue at 4-3. The Big Ten as a whole on both sides is wide open. Obviously, the East are much more dominant in their 9-1, 9-1, 9-1 for the Ohio and the Michigan teams, and then the other side is a lot more even. But yeah, I mean, we could be looking at Ohio Wisconsin final. We could be looking at Michigan State Iowa. We could be looking at Michigan Minnesota. It's crazy. There's so many ramifications for this game. But then if Ohio State win it, they're locked into the Big Ten and probably no. Yeah, maybe. But yeah, as I say, if the Ohio State offense turn up like they did against Purdue, and the defense have taken a step forward in recent weeks, yes, they still led up 20, I can't remember, I've already forgot the result against Purdue, 29 points, I think they conceded, something like that. But they are looking better. They've gradually got better throughout the year. They're starting to round themselves out on defense, and the offense is firing on all cylinders. I'm very nervous being an Ohio State fan, as you always are, going into a game. But I would be surprised to see Michigan State win this one.
Yeah, when you look at total yards per game, the Buckeyes are third in the nation.
So they're gonna
pile it on the Spartans regardless. They are 19-point favourites, Ash. Do you think that's a little bit much, or is that on the money?
don't know. Michigan State defense have been solid, and their offense can put points on the board, I think. But I think maybe I'd say that's probably about right. I would say that's probably about right.
Fair enough. Let's move on. Arkansas at Alabama. Mm. Is there another shock on the cards?
But that's why this one's on here. I mean, it would be a tremendous shock if it happened. I think this would be the biggest shock of the year. But with the way the season's gone, the way Arkansas have performed against certain teams, I had to include it on here. Because also, if Bama lose, they're out of the playoffs, let's be honest with you. You can't be Bama with two losses and in the playoffs. And as you said, Arkansas have seen over Texas and Texas A&M, and they won against Michigan State this week. They lost to Auburn. But yeah, I mean, this Arkansas, when they want to, can turn it on. And a game like Bama, in Bama, we've seen crazier things. And I think it could just be an exciting watch, because on the flip side, Bama could flip the switch and put 60 on them and only concede 10. It's literally how it could go. It could be a closely fought game that either one of the teams could win out, or Bama could go, nah, you're all right, I'm going to put 60 on you, see you later.
Yeah, the over-under of 58 seems very low, considering.
Yeah, I would be very... I don't know. If the defense if the Arkansas defense turns up that turned up against Texas and Texas A&M, that's a fair assumption. But if they don't, yeah, that's going to be... I wouldn't be surprised to see 70, 75 points total on the board.
Yeah, completely agree with that. I think this is... If Alabama make the playoffs with a two loss record and Cincinnati missed out, I'm walking out. I'm done with college football at that point.
people might be saying a few things then.
The peasants will revolt. And then finally, we got some SMU Mustang Cincinnati Bearcat, Ash.
Yeah, very interesting game this one, because it's second and third in the AAC. Despite Cincinnati being 10-0, they're still not top, because Houston have a better conference record by a victory. They're 7-0, Houston, and Cincinnati are 6-0. And then SMU are just behind on 8-2 with a 4-2 conference record. So they're not getting to the title game. It's going to be Houston-Cincinnati, but this is more for Cincinnati's playoff hopes, their unbeaten season hopes. And just SMU have been playing some good football. They lost narrowly to Memphis last week, and then this week they obviously saw off UCF quite comfortably with 55-28. It's going to be a very exciting game. Tanner Mordecai up against Desmond Ridder. The Bearcats defense that at times has looked stout and then at other times looked very suspect. And then obviously you've got Ulysses Bentley, the running back from SMU, Reggie Robinson, the wide receiver. I'm really looking forward to this game. And I think it could potentially be one of the games of the week. I would recommend people going out and paying attention to this game. If they can watch it live, great. Obviously it's difficult to watch these sort of games live over in the UK, but if you can manage to find a stream, it's on. I'm not sure what time it is on. It's on at 8:30 UK. Yep. So it's a very decent time.
It's also on ESPN.
Oh, fantastic. There we go. There's no reason for you lot not to go and watch it. It's going to be a fantastic game. Yeah, you lot. Our lovely listeners, I would highly recommend you go and watch this game. I think it's going to be a shootout and a closely fought game, and Cincinnati are going to win.
As long as Tanner Mordecai... Actually, I think I've benched him. I've benched him. I think I'm playing...
you're going to bench him for the game, yeah? Yeah, you have a minute. Cunningham. Yeah, to be fair, Louisville have got Duke, and Hendon Hooker's got Tennessee. Have got South Alabama, I believe. Yeah, Alabama. So
those like a couple of cupcakes.
I would say so. Yeah, Tanner Mordecai against the Cincinnati defense. If they're on game, Mordecai could be under 200 yards, a couple of interceptions and a touchdown potentially. So it's a big risk in a fantasy perspective. So I can't blame you doing that.
Thanks. Ash, what do you know about Alec Pierce, Cincinnati senior wide receiver?
Unfortunately, not a great deal off the top of my head. Why, are you looking to pick him up? Is that what you're saying?
No. I read an article on him the other day, and he sounds like he's got absolutely everything that you'd want in a wide receiver. I just hadn't heard his name, so I thought maybe you'd
No, so I know that he's a senior, so he will be coming out this year.
Yeah.
Quite tall. Yeah, he's a what, 6'3"? Is he 6'3"?
Yeah, 6'3".
Yeah, but I haven't seen a lot of his tape. I mean, to be honest, outside of the defense and
Desmond Ridder.
I haven't watched a whole lot of tape on Cincinnati offense, but maybe that's one that I'll have to have a look at when we get into the draft season.
Absolutely, Ash. That's the week 12 look ahead done. We've covered the showdown, week 11 review, obviously the playoff rankings as it's that time of the year. I think that's us done, bud. I think that's episode 73. Stamp the book, cover to cover. Have I missed anything?
No. I think we are done for this week. We got a lot in, and there was a lot of stuff to talk about this week, and there's definitely going to be a lot to talk about with some of the games going ahead next week. So I'm already looking forward to it, and it's been class as always.
Yes, sir. Rush Nation, as always, don't forget, head over to the website, check out all the boys' articles, because they are fantastic stuff. The fantasy football playoffs are coming around, so if you're in Dynasty League or just general redraft draft, Murph, Rich, and the gang have got you covered over there. IDP, Dynasty, DFS. Don't forget, if you are into your DFS football, check out the DFS podcast, because we've got exclusive contests now with the guys over at Fan Team. So come check those out. Ash, it's been emotional, my friend. Look forward to chatting to you after the second to last game of the season. I can't believe we're that close, man.
I know, it's crazy. And then for a lot of people, and to be honest, for me, the real excitement begins. You can't be sitting down and watching player tape, getting ready for the draft.
Yeah, we got a lot of exciting content coming your way, Rush Nation.
Really,
so keep your hats locked and loaded for that one. But until next week, enjoy this week's football. Hopefully some action in your life tonight. Then the rest of the football come the weekend. But it leaves me one thing left to say, and that is Saturdays for Rushing 2.